Okay, I want to welcome each of you here to the first session of the something about market gardening, the market gardening track. And so our first presentation here is just kind of, some of you may not even really understand the term market gardening, and so we're going to try to define that term and really focus on why we think you should be doing this. We're giving a sales pitch for market gardening here this morning.
Yeah, and for those who don't know us, we farm in Middle Tennessee, outside of Nashville, about an hour. And farming was a calling for us. We came out of teaching, and the Lord called us to agriculture for our own good and for the good of our family. And we have five children. Blessed to have four of them here, and two of our sons are farming full-time with us. Our farm runs 10 months of the year, so John and I and both of our sons work in the summer, but we lead out in the summer production, and then Joshua and Kelly, his wife, lead out in the winter. So our farm right now is still in full production and will be till the middle, towards the end of February. Then we take a short break, we start back in April. So largely we have a CSA and farmers market is our main avenues. So that's enough about us.
And before we get into it anymore, I'd like to have a word of prayer. So let's bow our heads. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for the privilege of being here, the privilege of learning. And Lord, I just pray that this time will be well spent, that at the end of this hour, people will feel like they have learned and grown and been challenged. And I just pray that you would guide Pam and I in what we should say and what we shouldn't say. And we thank you for doing this in Jesus' name. Amen.
So, just before we get started, hold your questions. I mean, we have a lot of information that we're going to be trying to cover, and so we don't want to stop the flow, but we also want to, we'll try to leave some time at the end to answer questions. So just jot your questions down as we go through our presentation, and we'll hopefully address them at the end.
Okay, so we'll start with, what is a market garden? And, you know, it's not like there's a dictionary definition of what market gardening is, but I think it's fair to say that it's less than 3 acres of cultivated land, and actually 3 acres is way on the upper end. Most market gardens are 1.5 acres or less.
The second thing is it's characterized by intensive beds. So you're getting multiple high-value crops a year. It's very intensive growing.
Take advantage of season extension. You're wanting to try to get as much of the year as you can in production, just to level out the cash flow. But also recognizing that a farmer does need a period of dormancy as well. If you're going full on year round, you'll burn out pretty quickly.
And usually it's also diversified. Those of you who've read our testimony know we've learned this the hard way. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. You want to really, I'll just throw in this for this year. Last year, strawberries did amazing for us. We had a really, really good strawberry crop. But just in December, while we were out visiting our son in Washington, the deer waltzed through the gate of our newly erected electric fence and ate our whole crop of strawberries for this year. And there was a time when that would have just been like devastating to us. I mean, it's going to hurt us, but it's not devastating. So you don't want all your eggs in one basket. You want to spread it out. And our strawberries will grow something. They didn't eat the crowns. They just ate all the leaves. So you know if they eat the leaves, it really compromises what's left of the plant. So, anyway, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
So we're still going through pain. Is this the only model? I want to just be clear. No, you know, we're not in any way trying to downplay or anything, you know, big farms. But we recognize that for the vast majority of people, that's not even an option. With the price of land now and the price of equipment, it's just out of the question. So we love this model because it is it's attainable. There's no one size fits all. You know, if you've been blessed with a lot of land and you have tractors and equipment, you know, go for it. We need, there's some crops that don't work well on a market gardening scale, specifically your grains and beans. You need a combine in order to harvest efficiently, and that just doesn't happen on an acre and a half. You couldn't even turn around a combine on an acre and a half. And I think that the market gardening model fits very nicely with the spirit of prophecy model. And I just want to, have any of you seen this book, Counsels on Agriculture? If you haven't, it will be available here at the conference in the booth area. And I know it seems a little self-serving since I compiled it, but I can promote it because it's not my words, right? So the third chapter here is a call for Christian farmers. And I would just really, really encourage you all to read this chapter because there is an incredible need in Adventism. I mentioned last night for farmers, for educated farmers who know what they're doing. And it's not just within Adventism, it's within the world. I make a statement and I stick to it that small-scale agriculture is the world's best hope for the future. And now notice I said the world's best hope because we know that there's a better hope outside of this world. And that's the ultimate hope. But as far as the world goes, small-scale agriculture is the answer to our problems. You know, our social problems, our emotional problems, our physical problems, our spiritual problems even. So we're pretty passionate about this, that this kind of agriculture is so holistic and so... well, it's the answer.
So, we are very passionate about it. And here's some whys. And excuse my lack of finishing this slide. This is one we were adding in, and I got distracted and went to bed last night. But I can just fill it out. It'll be fresh. So, you know, one of the whys is, for us, was definitely families working together. Not a lot of need for outside help. When our kids were young, I mean, they were a part of our team. You know, too many children today don't feel a part. They feel like they feel isolated or they feel like they're in the way. And parents feel they're in the way and they're unneeded. But let me tell you, from the time our kids could stand on a chair and sift peat moss, that was their job. So, you know, there's always work for everyone to do. If we erred, it was on too much work. But hey, that's a better way to err, Mrs. White says. There is so much evangelism that can be done through agriculture. I really, really appreciated the message this morning. Could have just stood on my seat and said, yes, just have people have no idea the evangelistic opportunities through agriculture. But I confess that we have been that person, oh, I just don't want to, I'm afraid to hurt that relationship, so I don't want to bring the light at the wrong time. We've erred in that. I was convicted this morning. But we have customers that have been with us for 20 years. 20 years, plus 20 years. You know, so this is one of our interns from this last year. You know, what a witness. You meet that smiling face at the market, and they are kind and intentionally thoughtful. You know, we try to train our people and encourage them. Well, I can't get into the marketing side. You can come to my marketing class. But I'll just go off on that. That's not what we should be going on.
So just one more thing on this families working together. We read a very profound statement. Somebody was writing an article on why our children are leaving the church or leaving Christianity. And they said, if you want children to follow your values or follow your lifestyle, you have to create a life where the children are needed. And that was so profound to us, and it's so true.
And we were so grateful that God kind of just threw us into that.
Like, before we ever read that.
It wasn't intentional.
He had put us there. But if the children feel needed, if they feel a part of the team, then you're united. But if they think they're in the way, or that you're making busy work for them because you don't have enough to keep them busy, they know that. They know the difference between real work and busy work.
And I'll just throw out one more thing, and I'll be talking about this more in the in the farmer's market one, but just the opportunity to build relationships. I mean, it is not a stretch to say we have people who've been with us for a long time. And I intentionally share information, maybe personal information about our life or whatever, to try to build their faith, to try to give them through our experience. You know, so I just shared with them, my husband has a cousin who's going through a very difficult trial. And on my way to visit them, I texted several of my friends from the CSA and said, you know what, this is something I've never shared. I think you would be really blessed by the blog of this cousin of ours who's going on. The blog is Mounting with Wings as Eagles at blogspot.com. It's Shelley Powell. She has ALS. She's in the last stage. Very difficult. So we were just with them. Her brother's here with us. But the Lord put it in my mind. I know women that would really be touched by her messages, and her faith experience will touch them. As soon as I started texting them, I started getting responses back. Wow, what a beautiful Christian experience. So this quote is the one that we love. Well, I was pasting it onto the next page. It was too much. Christ's method alone... You'll forgive me, right? You'll have grace. I mean, I have nothing to hide. I'm a real person. I made mistakes. Christ's method alone will give true success in reaching the people. The Savior mingled with men as one who desired their good. And I tell you, it's in our hearts that we really desire good for our customers. That is for
sure.
There's
no better place to mingle than at the farm.
And over food. He showed his sympathy for them, ministered to their needs, and won their confidence. We have won a lot of confidence. Now, can we tell you we have all these baptisms? No, but God has told us in our hearts those seeds and those relationships will bear fruit. Then he bade them follow me.
So is there any need more basic than food?
No.
I mean, maybe air and water. But food is a pretty basic need. So when
yes.
you minister to people's needs for food, it's a wonderful door.
Yeah. Yeah, it is also in Ministry of Healing 143. And I usually quote from Ministry of Healing, but this one, I was just inclined to use Gospel Workers. But we do love it. Okay, so this second part, there is need of coming close to the people by personal effort. When you're feeding people, I'm going to tell you, they just bond with you. There is a connection. If less time were given to sermonizing, which he shared already, and more time were spent in personal ministry, greater results would be seen. By faith, greater results would be seen. You don't always see them. Okay, so now that we've got to hurry on. So
okay,
that's the real why.
Yeah, and that's where our passion is. So, you know, I mean, yes, you can make a living at it. We'll be talking about that. But is it an easy way to make a living, Ricky? Is it an easy way to make a living?
There are much easier ways.
It's a good way.
But it's a good way.
And you feel really good at the end of the day. You sleep really well. But there are many advantages. Well, and this is specifically talking about the advantages of market gardening versus other kinds of agriculture. So you need less land. You know, as I said, most people can't afford big acreage, but most people, through hard work and scraping together funds, can afford 5 acres, 3 acres even. So you don't need much land.
2 acres.
Less water, you know, you're not irrigating as much land. Less equipment, you don't even need a tractor. Many market gardeners don't even have a tractor. Less stress, it's, you know, I mean, everybody's different in this, but I'm kind of a control freak, I'm coming to understand. I like things in control. And when you have, you know, big acreage, there's no way you're going to keep the weeds under control unless you're spraying Roundup, and we're not wanting to do that. So, but when you have a small area, you can actually stand, I mean, it's not easy, and we don't always do it. We'll be the first to admit, but you can stay on top of it.
He's not a control freak, I'll just say that. But what he does love is neatness and order. You know, that's how I believe God wants our gardens. I mean, Mrs. White says that. They should be a testimony. So does everything have to be perfect? No. But we need to be striving, and our farms need to represent the gospel in an appropriate way. If you go on a farm and it is just overgrown with weeds and it's a mess, I mean, who wants to go there?
Well, she has a quote that says, Our gardens, our farms, should be an object lesson of what the Lord wants to do in our hearts.
So he wants to clean it up. He wants to clean it up.
Pretty strong. So the beauty of this, and you know, I would encourage you to go back to Ministry of Healing, and there's a chapter, I don't remember exactly what it's called, but Help for the... Help for the homeless or the poor, something like that. And she talks a lot about agriculture in there and how if these people were just given a little piece of land that they could support themselves. And I think this is the model she's talking about. Mm-hmm. And we need to be the ones teaching them and showing them how to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, moving right along.
So, some keys to success. Intensive production. So, multiple crops each year. You want to get those high-dollar crops that you're going to plant them intensely. You know, we used to do it not so intensively. Well, there was a time when we were doing 7 acres, and now we're down to
two.
And we're providing for ourselves and our son and his wife and our younger son who's still at
we're
home.
We're making more on the 2 acres than
we ever. I mean, by many times the amount. So, well, obviously, we know more. Knowledge has increased in the area of agriculture. So you tighten the spacing. You know, we used to plant lettuce, what, 2 or 3 to a row?
Three.
You know, now we do 4 or 5. You know, so it's a much more intensive planting. We use beds instead of rows.
You know, those who are really on the top of their game will never leave the ground empty for more than a few hours, literally. And, you know, when a crop comes out before the day is over, another crop is in. That's how intensive you get with this. I mean, we're not quite there yet.
So we plant in beds that are 30 inches wide. That's kind of like the small market industry standard. You can straddle them. Even I can straddle them. You can straddle them, and you can work easily. But, I mean, are we done yet?
No.
So there are rows in the beds. You know, we don't just have long rows of cabbage anymore. You know, we have a bed, and it'll have two rows of cabbage staggered in the bed, or maybe three, I don't know.
Well, the big depends cabbage, on, if you want big heads, you do two rows to bed.
Okay, and then focusing on high-value crops.
We're going to talk about
We'll give you a list of high-value crops.
And obviously, you can only grow this intensively with really highly fertile soil, so you know, that's beyond the scope of this class, but you want to make sure you have soil tests and you get the soil amended as recommended. You know, you need to know what you're starting with. You know, we have a very unique issue in that we have super high phosphorus levels naturally in the soil. They mine phosphorus in our area, and so we know there's no way we're going to get rid of it. It's there, and we just have to deal with it. But you need to know those kind of things, because in the earliest years, I was adding phosphorus to the soil without even knowing that, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. We started out green as
grass.
Weeds.
That's better.
Grow cover crops. If you have the space, there's nothing better than cover crops for soil health. Make compost. You can never have too much compost. Put more in than you're taking out. That's the principle. Better to give than to receive. You want to be putting more into the soil than is coming out in those vegetables. Otherwise, you're mining the soil, and you're going to end up with, well, you know, that's how the West was won, right? Because they ruined the soil in the East. Just kept moving west. There's nowhere else to move, so we got to take care of it.
And I just say, John has chosen, and I think for him it's a wise choice, not to become a soil agronomist. He doesn't have that desire. So we just use Whitmer McConnell. He's here at this conference. You know, talk to him about getting a soil test. We get our soil tested. We get all of our plots tested once a year. It's very expensive. It costs us hundreds of dollars, but it has made our farm much more profitable. So John takes those soil tests, we send it to Whitmer, he tells us what to do to the soil, and slowly our soil is improving. All right, season extension. You want to get an early start in the spring, and you want to extend it into the fall. The easiest way to do that is with row covers, floating row covers. How many of you are familiar with floating row covers? Good. So I don't need to say much, but it's like dryer sheet for those of you who don't know, and you can pull it over your crops and...
Unscented dryer
sheet. Yes, unscented. But it still produces a lot of static electricity. And you pull those over your... So ours will cover the whole 30 by 100 plot. And we've learned over the years that when it's going to get really cold, if we have two covers, if we have three covers, what's the lowest we've gotten under the covers with three and not had any damage? Down into the teens.
Well, I mean, we just had a terrible
We don't want breeze. To talk about that.
It went down to -3.
With a wind chill of -20.
It was.
Our son called us in the middle of the night. We were out west. It was.
Yeah, the electricity went out.
We had a heated tunnel. We had a heated tunnel that we had no way to heat, and that was kind of like. You know, farming is something that you never conquer. You're always learning. You're always making mistakes, and you're always having opportunity to lean on the Lord. It's a most amazing school.
But the stuff that was covered with three row covers, especially if it was in a plastic, you know, a hoop house of some kind, was fine. Yeah. I mean, we have a general rule. If it's below freezing, one row cover. If it's below 20, two row covers. If it's below 10, three row.
Problem is we don't have enough of the three row cover scenario to cover our whole farm. And so when he's saying that in our hoop houses, those are unheated structures, we still have to have those three covers. So anyway, that's...
So there's low tunnels, there's hoop houses. Low tunnels would be just something that would cover a bed or two. Hoop houses or high tunnels, the terms are interchangeable, would be something you can walk into. That's certainly... The way I would say you want to be moving, because it's much less work.
But a good way to get started is with what they call caterpillar tunnels. You know, it's tall enough you can walk in. It's very...
They're going to have one here.
Yes. So that's a good way to get started. We didn't really have that option when we started, but...
Yes. And as far as season extension, I would just say this. The knowledge and information is out there for you to extend the season all year round. It's very simple. Anywhere in the country. I mean, we know people growing four seasons up in northern Idaho and in Maine. So it's very simple.
Well, there's need of knowledge to do it.
But it's pretty simple knowledge. And the only reason why we don't is because it takes a lot of covered area to keep it going year-round. And we stop in February so we can gear up for a big spring. It's not that we can't.
Yeah, spring is definitely our largest season. And another way to extend the season is with transplants. We transplant almost everything. It is... the way to go. You can put those transplants into a bed that has no seeds. Whereas if you seed everything together, guess what grows faster? Weeds usually grow faster. So before your plants are even really big enough to do much cultivating, the weeds have taken control. So transplanting is the way to go. We even transplant our corn. And some people are like, what? But we get our corn this big, and we transplant it out. Well, sometimes it really does get that big.
It's not good for it to get that big.
I mean, yeah. But anyway, the point is, the crows never get it. You're transplanting full rows.
No skips in the row.
No skips in the row. And you get much better germination.
You have Johnson grass. It looks so similar to corn. If you just seed it all, it's a mess. But if you transplant, you know. Anyway, we got to keep going. But transplanting is a way, and this is most easily illustrated with tomatoes. You know, you never direct seed tomatoes. At least, well, we found one lady this year that
directs. Can I just tell them that?
Well, we don't have time.
Okay. You ask me later.
So you want plants this big when your last frost date is, right? So you've got that much jump. That's 6-8 weeks jump. That's extending your season. Okay? So next keys to success is efficiency. And our son Caleb is going to be doing a class on efficiency. Specialized tools. These are simple tools, but very specialized. And they're not cheap either, many of them. But they're worth the money. You know, any manual trade has tools of the trade. And it's the same with market gardening. You're going to spend a few $1,000s just on simple hand tools. But they will make a huge difference. And other kinds of efficiencies is standardization of space and materials. That was a huge one for us. We're slow. It took us years to figure these things out.
Well, there also wasn't the same kind of knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, when we started, there was no internet. There was no YouTube. Today... you can go there and learn so much valuable information.
You know, you want one size of row cover, one size of silage cover, one length of irrigation. If you have all different size fields, it's amazing.
Yeah, you want to work smarter, not harder. Ricky's going to teach us about that, right? Going better, not bigger. So, but I just want to throw in too, the farm efficiency is huge. And we're blessed to have one of our team that is really into efficiencies and is always, always helping our farm to run smoother. And it's not just farms, it's homes and every area of our life. We need more efficiency. So we're keeping on here. Keys to success. Direct sales. Eliminate the middleman. Now, we have actually three stores that we're selling to now. And so when John did this presentation originally, we've been back and forth with that. I guess I would just say there's been years where we've sold to some middlemen through some stores, and then there's been years where all we've done is direct sales. Direct sales is what we aim to do, but we have enough of certain things on our farm that we really kind of need some of those middlemen. So right now we have three small kind of community stores in Nashville that we sell carrots, microgreens, and bread. We have a gluten-free bread business as well. So
I think some spinach and salad.
Sometimes, yeah, when the frost took us out with this lettuce. So when we get back after this, we'll have a lot of lettuce. They'll be selling lettuce. So it's good to have, again, a variety. So I'm thankful that we do have a few stores that we're using now. But mainly, farmers market makes up about, well, it was less this year, but maybe a third of our income. I think it's got to be more than that.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, you know, I won't go into our bookkeeping, but it's very complicated because we're really running three businesses under one umbrella. So it's a little hard to think, okay, yeah. So probably the farmers market is half. Our farmers markets have just, taken a very...
COVID was a blessing for small farms. Huge. I mean, the demand has gone up so much since COVID.
Yeah, so CSA and farmers markets are where we get, I mean, I guess we should maybe say 85% of our 90. I do the bookkeeping, but the point is we are doing more and more wholesaling. And so we have some wholesale accounts that, you know, I would say through the fall, we've been maybe grossing $2,000 a month through wholesale. So it's growing for us because, well, our boys want to do more of that.
Does everybody know what CSAs are? Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody not know? Okay, just one or two. So we won't take much. But it's basically a subscription where families or individuals sign up with the farm for the season and get a box every week or two.
Yeah. We have about, I would say, maybe 150 families. That is where the why comes in. We're seeing those people, some of them once a week for 10 months of the year. That's a lot of building relationships year after year after year. They've watched our kids grow. We really are quite passionate about CSA for the relational aspect. Okay. High-end restaurants pre-COVID. You know, right now, we are not selling to any restaurants. We've had very mixed. I mean, we know farmers in our area who do really well with restaurants, but for some reason, it has just never really worked well for us.
But of course, when COVID hit, I mean, literally overnight, that was gone. And those farms, it's amazing how quickly those farms were able to pivot and to get into other markets. Because when you got a field of lettuce and all of a sudden your market is gone, you better do
And some find success with wholesale, local grocers. And that's what I would say. We get a very high, we get a high dollar amount from those local grocers. If we were trying to sell to Whole Foods, probably it would be a different story.
Yeah, but don't even try to get into the big guys. I mean, it's not worth trying.
And I think for us and for the stores that we sell to, do you know about trap crops? I think our products for them are a little bit like a trot crop. Like people, they post it on their Instagram. Oh, we have, you know, lettuce from Bountiful Blessings Farm. And people who go to our market now are going to come to that store because they can get it there. And then they'll buy other things. And so I think they settle for maybe not making quite as much on us because they know that the product itself is going to bring people to buy more.
Planning, and again, you know, we could spend a lot of time on this, but I think a lot of people don't kind of just sit down and run the numbers, you know. I mean, we've been making a living off the farm for many years, but our definition of living, making a living, is probably not the same as most of your definitions of making a living. And that's part of it, is learning how to live on less. But, you know, but, I mean, just so you need $30,000 to cover your expenses, or at least you think you need $30,000, and you're selling lettuce at $3 a head. How many heads of lettuce is that?
A lot.
Come on, somebody should be able to tell us. 10,000 heads. I mean, that's doable, but that's a lot of lettuce. And, you know, I mean, do you have a market to sell 10,000 heads of lettuce? So, I mean, just simple things. So you need to know how much you need to make and then figure out, okay, if I'm going to make that much, how much do I need to plant? You know, I will admit that when we started, we just weren't growing enough. You know, you've got to grow enough to be able to sell enough to be able to earn enough. Know when it needs to be planted. You know, do you have a schedule of planting? Okay, if we have a CSA and they want lettuce every week of the year, when do we need to be planting that lettuce?
And that's what we do.
I wish it was that simple, but it's not that simple because plant growth slows way down in the winter, so you have to bunch up your plantings in the fall in order to have lettuce every week of the year.
Yeah, so our son who grows microgreens, in the summer, it's like 5 days.
No, seven, I think.
From planting to harvest. But this time of year, what did you say? It was like...
2 weeks.
It's a long, that's a big difference.
I mean, it's basically double. It depends on where you are in the country, but pretty much double in the dead of winter for us in Tennessee. And so again, you know, for a home garden, you plant 20 zucchini plants and you're overrun with zucchini for a few weeks and then they peter out and you're done till next year and you've had all you want anyways. So
you're sick and tired of zucchini.
But, you know, for a market garden, you need to be having something every week at the farmer's market and preferably something consistent so they know, oh yeah, I can go there because they have that. So tremendous amount of mental energy that goes into planning.
Yeah. And we do. John is the one who does all of that kind of planning for the summer. And, you know, we plant zucchini crops and yellow squash 4 or 5 times.
Once a month,
you know,
we're seeding squash
so
and zucchini.
It gives us a continuous flow of, yeah.
Okay, we're rushing along here. So we've talked a little bit about size. I love this quote, always tend the smallest amount of land possible, but tend it exceptionally well. It's not about how much area you're growing, it's how well you're growing on that area. I can tell you, and again, we have to be careful throwing out numbers, but I like to just throw out a few numbers because there's still this mentality in Adventism that you can't make a living in market gardening. But we know somebody in our area that is projecting to gross $1 million on less than an eighth of this year. And that's he's getting a lot into value added. So in other words, you know, having prepared salads in a clam shell with a little thing of salad dressing, you know, you can take $2 worth of produce and turn it into a $12 salad, you know, by value adding. And so, you know, the sky's the limit as to how much you can make on a very small area of land. You know, he was making $500,000 before he started doing the value adding stuff. And that's gross. Again, you know, he's got a big labor force and all of that, but he's making a living. You can be sure of that.
Well, but we want to balance that to the why. You know, that's not our goal. That's not our goal. We aspire to make enough money to support, we say, our lifestyle of choice. Okay, so this is what we need to support, but we want to be able to invest in our neighbors, in our church, in conferences like this. These things are a priority to us. And there are a lot of other farmers who are making a lot more money than us, but that's not our goal. That's not why we are farming. So at least one full-time person per half acre. Income potential...
Well, I would just say that I would say a minimum of one full-time person per half acre. If you're doing it really intensively, probably more like one full-time person per quarter acre. So don't go out and plant acres of produce. Yeah. There's no way you'll be able to stay on top of it.
And we really encourage... I mean, we really discourage anyone from trying to get into market gardening solo. The only solo market gardening that you might want to consider is growing microgreens or maybe flowers. Those are high-dollar crops that you could actually probably do by yourself. But the market gardening model that we're showing you is just not feasible unless you're somebody who doesn't need sleep. You're not going to live the way that we are kind of promoting the why. You're not going to be able to experience the why if you're trying to do it by yourself. It just couldn't happen.
So income potential of $100,000 per acre is very doable. We are doing that. Now, it didn't happen overnight for sure, but it's very reasonable to be earning, and this is gross, but $100,000 per acre. In fact, in your planning, you need to figure that out. And of course, you're not going to grow an acre of one crop, but you have to extrapolate out, okay, I'm earning this much for a 100-foot bed of kale. If I was growing an acre of kale, and how many beds is that? Would I be making at least $100,000? Does that make sense? And if the crop is not making that much money, then it's not one you want to grow.
Unless you have a CSA like we do, and you grow some crops just because people love them. Like we grow corn. I'm telling you, there aren't any markets, you know, small market gardeners who are trying to make that big dollar, they're not growing corn. It's just not a profitable crop. But for our customers, they love it. They love it. So, location. This is something that, I mean, God chose the location for us. We didn't have anything to do with the farm that we live on, which you've seen in the pictures, was purchased by my husband's parents for their retirement. 190 acres in their retirement. And no kids around who were even considering farming like us. We were like, what are they going to do with all that land? Anyway, location is important. Ideally, you want to be within 1 hour's drive from a major metropolitan area. And we cannot emphasize this enough. We know people who are are good farmers. They're doing a good work, but they are not within that hour of a major metropolitan area. And it's hard, you know, out in Hickman County where we live, you know, they didn't care a thing about organics when we started. They just wanted a good crop. You know, they would fuss about the price some, and, you know, but the point is our market is in Nashville, and those people are very happy to pay us what our produce is worth.
And the hour is a bit arbitrary, but yeah. The point is you don't want to be spending all your time on the road, because that's
taking you from the
garden. In lay terms, that's Muda. Mm-hmm. Our son, if you're here for his class, will teach you about lean thinking. And Muda is waste. And so that's definitely waste.
So good water source. This is not always in one's control. We are blessed to have a spring that pumps out 60 gallons a minute. But God has a lot of other springs out there. Don't be discouraged. You know, he gave us that spring before we even knew we were going to be doing agriculture. And here's the other thing, is that you don't need so much water. John already said that. If you use drip tape, it uses way less water. We have way more water than we need. But you do need a good water source.
Good sun exposure, good soil. But again, soil on a small scale can be, I hate to say made, but you can really improve a soil a lot on a small area in a very short time. It's going to take some money, it's going to take some work, but you can take a poor soil and make it a pretty good soil quite quickly. Mm-hmm. The size of, okay, we're just going back here. Okay, fairly level, that's always helpful. Obviously, from an erosion point of view, the more slope it is, the more you have to worry about erosion. If you spend a lot of money and effort building a soil, the last thing you want to see is it washed away. So level helps. It's not absolutely necessary. We've talked about beds. You're standardizing. Most market gardeners will either have 100-foot long beds. A lot of them actually are going to 50-foot long beds. But the point is, this becomes a unit of measurement. Because you're thinking about, okay, I know one bed will fit this many heads of lettuce. One bed will produce this many bunches of radishes. So by standardizing it, it helps tremendously with your planning.
And narrow pathways. You don't want to waste a lot of space. So I think ours are more like 12 now.
Yeah. In the hoop houses in our intensive growing areas, they're all 12 inches, which is pretty narrow. But with a little practice, you can manage it. If you have young kids, you probably want to go a little wider.
Yeah.
And we like things in blocks. So 8 beds is kind of a standard, because that's a standard 30-foot wide hoop house, you know, will fit 8 beds. And so that kind of, again, becomes a standard unit of measurement. Okay. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but probably many of you have seen or heard of Curtis Stone. He used to have a lot more. He's actually not even farming now, but he was called the urban farmer. He was growing in people's backyards. He came up with this crop value rating, which I think is helpful. He rated crops on 5 characteristics. 1 was short days to maturity, 60 days or less. That's, you know, the quicker you can get them in and out, the more money you're going to make. High yield per linear foot. So at least 0.5 pound of product per foot of bed. High price per pound. And again, this was a few years ago, so he might up it here, but minimum of $4 a pound. Lettuce mix, you should be, I mean, we sell a half a pound for what?
We sell
$6. So, long harvest period, so 4 months minimum. And obviously with lettuce, one crop is not going to go 4 months, but you can continuous succession crop for, you actually can go year round. The silers are going to tell us how to grow lettuce in the heat of the summer. And then the last one is popularity. So high demand, low market saturation. You can grow the best crops, but if there's not a market for it, you're making expensive compost. So those five things, and you rate your crops based on these five criteria. And we won't take time to go through all of them, but you can take a picture of that. If these are his ratings. You'll notice tomatoes is actually a 3 out of 5. It's a very, very profitable crop, but I'm trying to think of those five, which it does well. It's not 60 days or less, so that's one thing. Oh, sorry.
I was going back to this one. So, John was just trying to say what criteria. It doesn't.
It's probably not the high yield per linear foot.
Yeah, but it's very popular, and we do charge a pretty good price.
And depending on where you are in the country, you may not even have a 4 month harvest period, so that might be
that.
The other one. Okay, just go back.
Okay.
So notice the ones that are 5 over 5s. They're the salad mix kind of stuff: arugula, lettuce, baby kale, salad mix, turnips, and spinach. Now, when we say turnips, these are not just your standard. Field turnips, the big purple top turnips. These are refined white Hockeri salad turnips that are they're delicious. Spinach, 5 over 5. You can grow spinach all
People
year long.
Love
well,
spinach.
No, I say all year long. Not in the summer. It's pretty hard to grow in the summer. But.
Hockeri.
H-A-K-U-R-E-I.
It's the size of a radish, and they are delicious.
So they can get as big as, you don't want them much bigger than that. A golf ball or a little bigger maybe.
So infrastructure. Heated greenhouse for seed starting. That's kind of essential. You need some place to get your seed started. Because you're going to do transplants, right? So those transplants need a place to... Okay, washing area, cement slab with a roof. It can be very simple. You start simple. We started in the kitchen sink.
Yeah, notice we say needs with a question mark, because most market gardeners start without all these things. But ideally, you would have these things.
Yeah, if you can. Walk-in cooler. You can ask us later how to make a simple, inexpensive walk-in cooler. Hoop houses, you need 2 or 3. And again, it's like we started with nothing. So,
I mean, that or 2 or 3 is just saying the more you have, the better.
We definitely have come to realize everything grows better undercover where we live. So we have as much undercover as possible. Water for washing area and irrigation, and deer fencing. For us, that is critical. The deer devastated our farm this year, and that's why we went to an 8-foot electric fence.
We had deer fencing, but this year they were particularly hungry, I guess because of the drought, and we didn't have enough fencing.
We would just cover the plots that had things we knew they liked, but
they were eating everything. They normally don't, put it that way.
So we know a lot of farmers who had extra challenges this year. So now the whole area we're growing in is fenced.
Okay, we are running out of time. So just quickly, this is just a sampling of specialized equipment brought forth. If you don't have a tractor, you probably want a BCS, which is a walking tractor, two-wheel tractor. Wheel hoes are pretty essential. There's a number of hand tools that I have a resource sheet that I sent to, not this Terrace, but anyway, I sent it, and I'm not sure where it is, but I hope it's up somewhere. But I have quite a detailed resource sheet that if you can't find it on AdAgra, look us up and we'll try to get you a copy of a lot of these things. Greens Harvester, if you're doing the salad mix kind of stuff, those 5/5s, you need a harvester. Startup costs, well, you know, Elliot Coleman back in his book was suggesting $15,000. That was 95. J.M. Fortier in 2014 suggested more like close to $40,000. Daniel Mays, who wrote a really good book called The No-Till Organic Garden, or I don't know, but you can find it, The No-Till Organic Farm or something like that. I think this is pretty realistic. $30,000 the first year in investment, and then reinvesting and investing $70,000 over the next 3 years.
Now, obviously, you're going to look at that number and say, "Oh, there's no way." That's, but you know, there are slower ways to get started. And it just takes longer. You know, we took that longer path. You know, Daniel Mays was making a good income within 3 years. You know, I mean, we weren't... He, 3 years in, he was making more than we're making now. Okay, so there's all... It's all just about what do you need? What are your expenses? How could you get into this with the least? But honestly, in starting a business, this still is quite... low to think you could start a business. Even if we just said the $100,000 mark, you could really get a good start, except steel prices have gone up terribly. So hoop houses are more expensive, but you still could get a good start with $100,000.
But again, you don't want to invest beyond your level of knowledge. This is a big problem. People with money spend lots of money on stuff they really don't need, and it's a mess. So you want to invest as your knowledge and skills increase. Okay, last slide. Where do you go from here? Read, watch, listen to recommended resources. I'll just throw one out there. Josh Satin. Josh Satin, S-A-T-T-I-N, has a YouTube channel with lots of videos, and he actually has developed a market gardening series of lessons free on YouTube. And so it's a great place to start. But lots of resources, lots of good books. Spend time working with people who are doing it. That's the best way to learn, hands-on. Tour farms, go to conferences, and just start growing. You know, that's the biggest thing. Just do it. And with you know, as you learn, and you hopefully you learn from your mistakes as well as your successes, God will bless. So, yeah, you know, the more you can put into it, the quicker start you can get. But if you don't have that kind of capital, you can just get into it slower. And, you know, don't quit your job quite yet.
Yeah. And just, you know, make sure, the last point, make sure that God is leading. If we hadn't known for sure that God was leading, I think it really would have destroyed what we were trying to do. But we knew God was leading. So spend time with the Lord. ask him, is this, it's not God's calling for everyone. Obviously, we need lots of different kinds of careers. But if God is calling you to the market garden, then make sure that, you know, you be faithful to that call and that your spouse is right alongside in agreement with the calling.
Yeah, we could take some time on that one. Well, just on the importance of it, because, yeah,
it's very important.
Okay, well, we used up all our time.
We have, honey, we have 2 minutes.
No, honey, this is the time.
Okay.
So, I mean, we'll take a question or two, but we need to clear out. Okay, these are the two right here.
Two. We have one farmer's market that is very robust. And the second one is a educational market that we have our interns manage by themselves.
Tuesday and Thursday. Afternoon markets are the best, in our opinion. Evening markets.
And a hoop house?
Yeah. Difference between a greenhouse and a hoop house. I wish there was some well-defined terms, but we call a greenhouse something that's heated.
And it's
inflated.
It will
have two layers of plastic with air in between to give a little insulation. And then it's heated, but it's the exact same physical structure mm-hmm. as a hoop house or a high tunnel.
Or a cold frame
is another term. So there's all these terms mm-hmm. people use, but it's all the same kind. What can't be transplanted? These are good questions. I wish we had another half hour. But your tap-rooted crops like carrots, any parsnips or any of those.
Well, we don't transplant radishes.
Fast-growing crops. Radishes we don't do. Your baby crops, your salad mix crops, because they're grown intensively, we usually direct seed all those. Beans and peas, we usually direct seed because they're fast. And I think that's about it. Everything else we transplant. Yeah, oh man, we need a whole nother session on winter growing, but yeah, you don't want to leave those covers on long term. You just have them on at night or when it's really cold, because you need to let the moisture out of there, so you take them off during the daytime. And in the winter, you need very little irrigation. You got to be very careful. You can cause real problems. Okay, well, we'll be around, so if you have more questions, just catch us. But thanks for being a good audience.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.